Like that's your 8:06 on this Friday. It's July 2nd. Big happy birthday again to KPCW, celebrating 41 years of being your community-supported listener radio station here in Park City in Summit and Wasatch Counties. 59 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us, I've got Cesar Cornejo with the ABC Forecast Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy birthday to KPCW. It sounds like it is a great day to start off so far with cooler, slightly cooler temperatures in Park City. What we do expect to see is that we'll have temperatures ranging around the mid-80s for us today and the chance of some showers. But again, you know, this is summer, so we do expect to see a little bit of activity like that. But it's not too bad as it does remain on the spotty side. And as we go into tonight, the shower activity starts to die down and we see less chances of that. Mostly clear skies, a low of 60 for us. As we go into the weekend, we can expect to see that Saturday we have sunny skies, if not mostly sunny skies, with a little bit of a chance of some shower activity. 86 degrees, so it'll be great to be outdoors. Just stay weather aware when you are out and about. Saturday night, we'll see mostly clear skies, 61 degrees, so we have a nice and mild night for us. Independence Day, we start to see that we still have that slight chance of storms, but sunny conditions for us. A high of 88 as we continue to see our temperatures increase for a bit as we have more high pressure starting to dominate our area once again. We can expect to also see the slight chance of showers continue into parts of Sunday night, but we do calm down for a bit. We see a low of 60. And for Monday, we continue with a low of 84 on Monday. And a chance of shower activity as we see the return of some moisture for a little bit during the daytime. And then by Monday night, 60 degrees will be our low. We're going to see mostly clear skies. Tuesday, once again, sunny. 87 will be the high for us. And as we go into Tuesday night, mostly clear skies with a low of 62. And this actually starts the little bit of a warming trend. We'll see 88 on Wednesday with sunny skies, mostly clear on Wednesday night with a low of 63, and then Sunday, sunny once again, a high of 86 as we continue to see some warmer temperatures for us. From the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
Okay, thanks, Cesar. Have a great weekend. Well, we got Zaphod and Lola out decorating their float, number 31. Looking pretty nice. Again, going to be a parade starting at 11 o'clock here. Headed down Main Street, over to Park Avenue and City Park. And also today, we've got rugby games. We've got this evening, the Deer Valley Music Festival, Patriotic Pop Concerts. Apparently, some tickets still available. You'll have to go online to find about that. But we do have a number of road closures between now and 1 o'clock. No parking on Main Street, Park Avenue between 9th and 15th Streets, Heber Avenue, Sweet Alley, and all of the parking lots here on Sweet Alley. The roads will and streets, again, will reopen at 1 o'clock. There is free parking and transit from the Ecker Hill Park and Ride, the Homestake Lot, the Sandridge Lots, Park City School District there on Kearns Boulevard. And both Deer Valley and Park City Mountain Resorts have free parking with free transit to Old Town. There is paid parking in the China Bridge parking structure for $20 until 1 o'clock. Free parking will be available from 1 to 5, and then standard rates apply after 5 o'clock, which is $3 an hour with a maximum rate of $18. Again, the drop and load area will be available in the South Marsac lot. You will need to access the China Bridge parking garage again from Marsac Avenue with Sweet Alley now closed. Joining me now in the studio with our trails report, I've got Laura Smith with Mountain Trails. Also joining her, Chase Perry with Summit County Animal Control. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Laura, let's start with you. We got maps, though, in the shops this week, huh?
Yeah, yep, they're out. Ian delivered them a couple days this week. It actually takes quite a bit of time to do that. And there are two maps this year and probably going forth. Trail system's not getting any smaller. So, yeah, pick them up. There's two. You need them both.
Okay. Let's see. What else? You've got a trail worker leaving you, huh?
Yeah, we do. Oh, Nick, he's been so awesome. He's our he's the classic smart aleck kid. He keeps us all on our toes, and we're really going to miss him. So, big round of applause for Nick Herman. Thank you for all of your work these past 4 years.
Okay. And I've seen some of this on social media. You say a rattlesnake spotted on Ross Creek. I've heard about, apparently there are lots of them on the east side of the Jordanelle.
Apparently there are. Yeah. Then this is sort of a new phenomenon at this elevation. So, you know, the word is, and we'll be turning over to Chase here, who can talk to us about unleashed dogs. But if you're out in that area, you really need to be protecting your dogs and your kids and yourself.
Okay. So is this Ross Creek there around the Jordanelle? Is that there's a trail that wraps around?
Correct. There's a trail there, and there's also the Sky Ridge Trail. We've been talking about it for a few weeks, the Milky Way Trail that Mountain Trails just finished building. It goes up to the peak, and then if it's out and back for bikes, and you can actually go around if you're a hiker. So if you're anywhere out in that area, Ross Creek, Jordanelle, even out to the eastern side of the lake, just be very diligent about snakes.
Okay. And they usually give you some warning, so stand
up. Slowly back away from the snake.
Yeah. Let's see, you've got the Jupiter Peak steeplechase planned, but it's going to be virtual this year, huh?
Yeah. So in January, we decided not to invest in the upfront costs of running the race. It is a fundraiser for Mountain Trails, and so we put it virtual. The racers will be out on the course from July 1st through the 17th, and we're asking bikes, as always, on those two Spiro and CMG trails, they tend to go very, very fast because they're just straight lines or steep. So bikes, check your speed as always, and then runners, earbuds not super cool. There's a lot of trail user out there, you know, keep your ears open.
So you've got runners headed up CMG and Spiro, is that the problem here, the conflict?
Yeah, so up CMG and then Apex, and then up to, and it goes up to Jupiter Peak, Tri-County, then it comes down through Blazing Saddle, past Shadow Lake, and then eventually down Spiro, and that's kind of where we get the conflicts, is on Spiro.
Okay. So the plan is to bring it back live?
Next year, fingers crossed.
Yeah. What about Tour de Suds?
So Tour de Suds, that one, amazingly, is actually a pretty simple event to put on, and it is our most popular event, and I think that we will be doing it live. If everything keeps going the way it is with COVID, we plan to have the Tour de Suds.
Okay. Well, let's turn it to Chase then. Chase, you're an officer with the Summit County Animal Control, and wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about how responsible dog owners behave on the trails. What are you seeing out there?
Well, I mean, we want to keep the dog owners and their dogs as safe as possible, and the number one way to do that is with a leash. It protects you from wildlife, protects the dogs from attacking wildlife, other dogs, cars. Those trails are really close to the road, and you want to keep them on leash in the parking lots and even a ways off of the trail. I believe it's 150 feet, right? So you want to keep your dogs on leash for 150 feet off the trail and, avoid them attacking and chasing other people and wildlife, so.
Yeah, the way I understand it, that Summit County electric collars are considered being on leash.
Correct, but you do want to have a physical with you just in case your dogs get in a mishap. So you can physically leash them if they're chasing other dogs, because they tend to ignore the remote at that point.
Yeah. So have you had any incidents, though, of dogs and wildlife that you're aware of?
At this time of the year, there's lots of dog bites. Lots of dogs getting hit by cars. I mean, it's just summer. Everybody's out and about.
Chase, what's the penalty or the fee for a wildlife chase or attack if a dog goes rogue?
Well, so if the dog comes in contact with one of the wildlife animals, I mean, they could be cited from us and a DNR officer. That being said, it could be up to $1,500 plus any damage or any, that the wildlife officers have to deal with.
Okay, and then we've also know that there's been conflicts with dogs and livestock, not just wildlife, but livestock. And people actually have the right to shoot a dog?
Correct, but it does have to be in the process of attacking. If it's in the pasture, that dog's not necessarily attacking. It's more so running at large.
Okay.
And there's a stiff fee for that, right?
Yep, so running at large, $100. Attack, chase, and worry, $300. If it makes contact with the cattle or horse, you know, whatever, that's $500. So it gets pricey, and then you're held responsible for the damage also.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think we're good. Just have fun. The trails are going to be amazing. And as I look down Sweet Alley here, maybe pick an out of town trailhead today.
Yeah. Okay. Laura and Chase, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
And stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. Later on, Becca Gerber and also Zoe Anderson, a dancer with Parsons Dance, previewing the reopening of the Park City Eccles Center on Saturday night. Joining me now on the phone, I've got Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy birthday to KPCW.
Oh, well, thank you, yeah. Let's talk first. Any new projects coming through the door since we've last talked?
There have been a couple. Two of note, we received a conditional use permit application for an event facility, an event barn out Weber Canyon Road. It's under the title, it's being called Riverbend Ranch, and so we are going through the service provider noticing for that. Hasn't been scheduled in front of the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission yet, but that will be probably of interest to residents out the canyon. We got a low impact permit for a lavender farm operation in Silver Creek, the Redden Lavender Farms, and that's out on Redden Road. Growing lavender, I think there'll be some associated barn with that, so that's coming in. And interestingly, you know, we got a whole list of like what I'd call minor permits, other low impact permits, but we're starting to see an uptick in sign permits. And albeit that might be just a basic administrative review and review and approval, to me it's beginning to suggest that the local business is beginning to come out of the pandemic. We're seeing businesses starting to recreate, reinvent, reestablish themselves. So I think that's a sign of health here in our community. But those are really the new permits of interest here in the last month.
Okay. Hey, any updates with regard to the Tollgate Canyon project that you had mentioned a couple of months ago?
No, still out in service provider review. We have not scheduled that in front of the Planning Commission as of yet. So hopefully next month when we come back, I can give you a bit more of an update on that, let the public know of the schedule for that. But right now, still in the in-house review.
Okay. Let's see. The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission doesn't meet until July 13th, but any topics that you know that will be on the agenda?
Yeah, it's going to be fundamentally focused towards some code amendments. We're going to be going back and taking a look at our parking regulations. Those could use some serious review and updating. They haven't been touched in, a number of years. So we're going to be looking at parking regulations. And part of it, on a side note, you know, the nature of parking is changing and what associated infrastructure with parking comes with. And I think part of this discussion will be to what degree will we begin to integrate EV charging stations as part of our requirements, because again, we're seeing more electric vehicles. So that's going to be probably the biggest discussion we're going to have. We're going to do some definition cleanups that we've been collecting a number of terms of art that need to be defined in the code, particular types of uses. For example, you know, the definition of what a bed and breakfast is, what owner occupied is, that will be one of a number. We'll be looking at that. And I think there's some cleanups some administrative cleanups that our attorney's office is going to be asking that we bring to the Planning Commission, things like durations of development agreements and some of the master plan relationships between those. So it'll be primarily code based on July 13th, as well as the following meeting, the 27th, we'll be bringing some code amendments as well. While we're talking code amendments, what will be on the very near term horizon, will coming out of Wednesday's discussion with the council, we're going to be bringing some landscaping amendments as well. So July looks like a lot of code work for us.
Okay. Let's see. The Summit County Council discussing water conservation on Wednesday. What direction, if any, did you get from County Council with this?
I got, frankly, clear direction where they would like to see us go. Really, there were three action steps that came out of that meeting. The first is, with the help of former Summit County Council member Dave Ure, who sits on the Weaver Basin Water Conservancy District, we're going to be reaching out to the Conservancy District and hopefully scheduling a stakeholder meeting with the Summit County water companies, as many of those as we can get around the table. And just to kind of show you the magnitude of this particular lift, the health department informed me recently that we have 40 public water systems in Summit County. In addition to that, we have between 20 and 25 seasonal public water systems. And so, unlike a number of other jurisdictions that have, you know, a municipal water system, we have over 60 entities that convey water to the residents of Summit County. And what we're hoping to do with that meeting is, once we gather, is to talk about, to the degree we can, coordinate conservation measures and hopefully develop quickly a consistent water stewardship message. So we're going to be looking to try and get that meeting together as quickly as possible. I mentioned the code amendments. That's what council has asked us to do on both the basin side and the eastern Summit County side, making sure that on the basin side we can change our code to better address the water usage. On the basin side, we actually have a fairly robust xeriscape landscape ordinance. The issue there is it only applies to commercial and multifamily projects. It doesn't address individual single family homes on individual single family lots. Really doesn't talk about the amount of landscape area or the amount of turf or what goes into that. So that could stand a re-review. On the Eastern Summit County Planning District side, there are no landscaping regulations or requirements. It was of interest to me that a number of the participants who spoke Wednesday night from the east side, I think expressed a general premise: hey, nobody likes more regulations than necessary. And, what people do in terms of improving their homes, their lots, with their landscaping, obviously is a very personal choice. But they recognize the impacts of irrigation water, secondary water, the amount of water that's going onto lawns, and it's impacting the overall culinary sources. And so I believe that we will have their support in coming up with reasonable regulations. So we're going to be doing that. And then finally, it's just we committed to working interdepartmentally and interagency-wide to put together, a quick and effective messaging, a communication strategy. I've been in contact with our communications department as recently as yesterday with Bridget Conway. Emily Quentin from our sustainability department is going to be all in on that. Health department will be included. But again, that messaging has to be broad. It has to be comprehensive, because It involves, again, not only a number of the water companies, but when it comes to just how we and when and the expectations of irrigating our own lots, around our own homes, that involves homeowners associations. So that's going to be, talk about a big lift, being able to put a program out that reaches everybody. That's going to be the target. I'm really confident, though, that this community understands the nature of this drought crisis. It's extreme. Depending on who you talk to, the experts, some will say this is probably in the Intermountain West the worst we've been in, 1,200 years. I've heard that statistic out there.
Given that, given that, would the county then ever go to a building moratorium, which we've seen done both by Oakley and Hennifer?
That's an excellent question, and one that I won't run rough with. I think right now, Leslie, the council, as well, frankly, all the municipalities in Summit County, completely understand where we are, and everyone's really concerned. And a result of that, I think all options are on the table right now. We're certainly not alone in this. I think that in terms of Summit County, the council last Wednesday didn't suggest that. I didn't hear the word moratorium, but I think what they want to do is before they would get to that step, they want to be able to develop a fact-based approach on how we're going to manage this. And I think that starts with bringing the most key stakeholders into the discussion. I don't think the council, this is just my observation, I don't think the council wants to make rough, quick decisions without having a better understanding of where we are. And that starts with those key entities, and probably what I heard coming out of that meeting, one of the key entities is the Weber Basin Water Conservancy District. I didn't fully appreciate this. Glenn Brown from the East Side spoke to this on Wednesday, but if there was not an existing water right held by a property owner, Weber Basin owns all those other rights. They're the biggest water right owner or controller, in this region. And having them part of the discussion is going to be critical. I think we want to be able to get that group together. I think we need to be able to get that message out there. And I think we need to be able to carefully monitor going into the rest of the season and moving forward into the upcoming years, how we manage this. But an answer specifically to will there be a moratorium, that was not specifically discussed on Wednesday night.
Okay. Quickly, I noticed that you and Peter Barnes were at Tuesday's Smart Growth discussion with the Park City Board of Realtors. Any takeaway for you at that point? I mean, it was kind of a Smart Growth 101 discussion, I guess.
Yeah, it was. I was, one, really impressed by the turnout and the diversity of the turnout in that group. Back in April of this year, the National Board of Realtors did a survey on affordable housing for the Board of Realtors. And the Smart Growth 101 discussion the other evening, I believe, was an outgrowth of that community survey, and they brought in a gentleman from the National Board of Realtors. I believe he was from Missouri, St. Louis, maybe more specifically. And what he spoke about were national trends. And again, the issues that we're facing here in Park City and Summit County and Eastern Summit County are not unique. These are the same issues that other communities throughout the country are facing. They're issues of housing availability. They're issues of housing affordability. They're issues of construction and, how communities evolve, but, doing it in a way that is sustainable, again, both, economically, environmentally, and socially. And what he talked about was, from the national board's perspective, what people, what communities, what they're looking for in the future of not only their residential development, but in their community design. And he talked about a number of points. He talked about the importance of walkability and connectivity, and you know, he talked about, you know, where appropriate, you know, a mix of uses and a mix of housing. He talked about the relationship to transportation, and you know, transportation being just more than the individual car or the bus, you know, the connectivity aspect of that, you know. But one of the points he touched on is, you know, in achieving those objectives, there will be a need to, in certain locations, talk about an increase in density. And again, those are the discussions we've been having here for a really long time. And I found it healthy because there was a discussion, a discourse amongst the audience. You know, he came in asking for more of a conversation than just an education or a lecture. And we heard that coming out of the audience. You know, we heard the full spectrum, you know, the need to be able to address the needs for employee housing, you know, essential services, you know, those sorts of people, because, you know, there is that link between housing and traffic. There were fears expressed about, you know, in doing that and increasing the density, you know, are we changing the character of the community, the reason that people have chose to come here and live? I thought it was healthy.
Okay.
And the reason is, I think it was a good discussion, because the more we can have this conversation on the front of the lobe and do it in public, I think the better our chances are to reach, you know, some decisions that will be the right decisions for the community.
Okay, I've got to leave it there. Pat Somek, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, Park City Council Member Becca Gerber. Good morning.
Good morning.
I thought you were going to be a little late. Just we've got an accident.
Yes, so there has been an accident at Deer Valley Drive in Heber with injuries. And so there has been some rerouting of traffic for the time being. There is a plan right now to route traffic up the intended bus lane for the time being. That will happen very shortly. And they have pushed back the closure of Park Ave until 8:45. So there is still some time for people to maneuver around and get through town. Please use caution, drive slow, and there is, you know, traffic will back up a little bit for the next little bit. But just remember that someone has been injured and is having a very bad day. And when you see our emergency vehicles on site, take a deep breath and just slow down, and you're going to get where you want to go, but it might just take a little bit of time today.
Okay. Was it a biker or a pedestrian involved? Cars.
I believe it's cars.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. Let's talk about paid parking. There was a lively discussion last night about paid parking, and council member Steve Joyce bringing up a discussion with the HPCA about how quickly parking fills up on Sundays, the idea of perhaps increasing paid parking on the event day. So is this an event to increase public transit or parking turnover, or just a little bit of both?
So this was really a comment by Steve, and it wasn't on our agenda. It came up during council comments and questions. And so we didn't have an opportunity. Use that as an opportunity to really discuss it. It was just a couple of exchanges between some of the council members and Steve. But look for it to come back on an agenda as an agenda item shortly. The parking on Main Street, when we implemented our parking program, it was intended to be a dynamic parking program where the cost went up as it got fuller, and we haven't really utilized that system. But it looks like it might be time to use that and to help control some of the traffic and coming into Old Town, because, you know, people are coming in here and not finding a place to park, and so they're turning around and it's causing circling, and that backs up our traffic and as well as causing parking problems. So we are really just looking to create some opportunities and some solutions to those issues.
So is there any discussion on what the new rates might be?
There was some discussion as to what they could be, I think, going up to $6 an hour and a maximum day rate of $30. But that was just a discussion point, and it hasn't been decided or voted on. And we look to having further discussions with the community and the HPCA, the Main Street Business Alliance.
Yeah, and there seemed to be a little bit of confusion about HPCA's role here. I mean, how are they involved in this process?
You know, we look to have conversations with them on anything affecting the street. And we want to make sure that they participate in these conversations. Sometimes it is hard, you know, just as our community has a lot of diverse opinions, the Main Street Business Alliance has members with a lot of diverse opinions, and it's hard sometimes to get a baseline as to actually where everyone stands. So we are really looking to them to help us provide a unified voice representing their street, and then we can also listen to residents and, you know, kind of take a poll from the council and bring all those different perspectives together.
Okay. Did sound like this would be brought back July 15th?
Yes.
Okay. We've also got a public hearing with regard to the Gordo Soils Repository as well?
Yes.
That same night?
Yes. Look for it to be a long meeting.
Okay. let's see. Councilmember Nan Worrell mentioning that an eviction coalition has been formed with Summit County and various nonprofits, something that we had noted in a report that we did on the situation taking place at the Elks Meadow complex there near Lower Pinebrook. Do we need to keep an eye on evictions here in Park City? I mean, is the city somehow responsible, or, you know,
this was kind of the first that I've heard of this coalition, and I had heard about some issues going on further out in the county, but I think it's always good to keep our ear you know, to the ground and understand what's going on and how things are evolving and taking shape, because we do know housing is very difficult in Park City as it is. And so if there is an opportunity for us to work with some regional partners and some of our local nonprofits to have a better understanding and potentially address the issue in the future, I think that that's not ever a bad thing.
Yeah. And I guess if there is a federal eviction moratorium, then how is it that people are getting evicted? I mean, can we not enforce it?
You know, I am not really sure how it all works, but I think that landlords can be clever and find loopholes and ways around it. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it does sound like there are some people finding ways to make it happen.
All right. Council voted to approve a 3-month contract for services from an outside development group with regard to the Arts and Culture District. This was after deciding not to approve a $1 million plus contract at your last meeting. So apparently we still owe this firm GTS some $300,000 in back pay. What's that about?
Yeah, you know, we have continued to ask for evolving plans. You know, as this process has moved forward, council has been very demanding in looking at different ways to look at the project, reducing the budget, reducing kind of the scope of our plans. And so I think every time we ask for more from us, that adds to the cost of these contracts. And so it's really coming, it's been driven by, you know, our public process and us continuing to ask for deeper dives into some of these processes and what this Arts and Culture District could look for. And, you know, it is a little bit more expensive up front, but I think that this will really help us evaluate and figure out how to make the best project possible. So, you know, our plan for now is to take the next several months slow, which is why we reduced the scope for the next three months down to that $78,000 while we figure out the soils repository and have those discussions, and then we'll be able to pick it back up and figure out how we're going to move forward.
All right. Council did approve the $150,000 budget for some temporary programming there at the Arts and Culture District, but not without some pushback. Councilmember Worrell echoing many of the same concerns that we've heard from the community about the soil at the site, saying that there needs to be more testing before moving forward and that the money might be better spent on that. You and other council members push back pretty hard on that. So what is the soil situation at the district right now?
So we've done a lot of testing at that site, both, you know, the deep ore drilling that goes down to wherever you hit sheetrock or water. And those are like the very comprehensive soils testing where you can look at all the different layers of soils and analyze what's where. And, you know, I think we did something like 22 different borers at that round. And then we also have done surface testing of the soil. And I think it's really important to remember that soil has been capped. And most of it is covered in concrete or asphalt. So it's not like there are the mine beveled soils just sitting on the top, except for in a couple of places where we took out buildings and took out the foundation. And so when that happened, they dug out the hole, and some of the soils down underneath the foundation may have been exposed, but then they pushed the dirt back on top, and then that was capped and covered, and that is going to be fenced and surrounded. So, I mean, really, I think it's one of those things that it's just the soil that you're going to find anywhere in town. And it's really important for people to keep in mind that we live in a mining community where there are those beveled exempt soils exposed on our trails, you know, along the rail trail, if you're out in Round Valley, if you're hiking up on the mountain. And so it's really important that we not be too reactionary about these things, because they are around town, and in this area at least they are capped and covered, and we don't really feel like there's any imminent threat in that area.
So would anything need to be filled in or capped then at the arts and culture site before this temporary programming got underway?
It's already been done. If you drive past, you can see the areas that they exposed the foundation, and it's already been filled in, and it's covered with, I can't remember, I want to call it like Britax, but that's not, it's like some official covering that goes over, and there's a couple holes punctured in it just so it can breathe.
Okay, and would there be any additional soil testing that would be required before we get people back on this site?
You know, we've done quite a bit of soils testing, like I said, both the deep soils testing and the surface testing, so we're pretty aware of what's there. And in the future, if you know, we get into the excavation and we feel that there's additional soils testing needed, we can always do that. And in addition, we are also having an independent review of our soils on the site, just as an extra check to make sure that, you know, we're seeing everything. So there is an independent review process going on right now as well. So I think that the area as it stands, people have been using it in our community for a long time. When they go get coffee at Silver King, it's capped, it's ground.
You did hear from somebody last night that you know, this the arts and culture site may not have gotten off on the right foot with the public, and now trying to bring people to the site with all of this talk of soil and construction equipment could be a tough sell. So I mean, is trying to get people there under this temporary programming idea a good idea at this point?
You know, I think that one of the things that I have really found is that when our community has a vision of how to do something really cool, we can really transform an area with very little money. We're seeing that going on around town with our active streets programs. If you go drive through Prospector with paint and a couple of bollards, you can really transform an area and clean something up and make it a really fun, cool, funky site. And I think that that's something, you know, when we speak to the authentic culture of Park City, is that we figure out ways to transform our spaces and make them feel fun and vibrant and funky. And I'm really excited to see what we're able to do with this area to really kind of, you know, part of the intent of the Arts and Culture District was to create kind of a locals reprieve from some of the craziness going on around town. And I think that this is an opportunity we're looking at right now where you can create a very local district and have some small programming, but also just, you know, some passive spaces that locals can go and enjoy. And, you know, they talked about big chessboards and, you know, umbrellas. And then also our really cool Transit to Trails program that's going to be launched with a grant from the CWC, where on the weekends from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., our residents will be able to reserve a shuttle ride up to Bonanza Flats. And I think it's got three drop-off places, you know, at Bloods Lake and another trailhead and then up at the crest. But what a great opportunity to get people out of their cars and provide some like complimentary transit service all the way up to Bonanza Flats. So, I mean, I'm very excited about the opportunities.
Okay, CWC, that's the Central Wasatch Commission. Mm-hmm. So they've given the grant. So even though we didn't have it budgeted, it's paid for?
Exactly. I think it was $14,000 from CWC, and maybe our trails and parks threw in like an additional $1,000.
Okay, in terms of getting anything happening there at the Arts and Culture District then, in terms of programming, when would that start?
You know, we're looking at it getting going within the next 3 weeks. The Transit to Trails program, I believe, starts July 10th, so that's coming up really quickly. I think you can already see that there's a lot of cleaning and kind of moving going on over there, and it won't take too long.
Okay. Finally, wanted to bring up the fact council approved an outside services contract to keep track of our short-term rentals. We heard from Mayor Andy Bierman bringing up how similar mountain towns in Colorado have a massive workforce housing shortage due to the proliferation of short-term rentals, basically taking out of market what had been workforce housing. He mentioned how any move by the city to curb this, though, would likely be met with some fierce resistance from the public. Are your hands basically tied on this?
Oh, it's not not fierce resistance from the public. It's fierce resistance from the state legislature, who's already essentially tied our hands in our ability to enforce and regulate nightly rentals. So, you know, it's a very interesting state that we live in, and I think that our residents would love to see us be able to do more and restrict nightly rentals in different parts of town. But and I think that we're kind of towing a fine line and making sure that we follow the law, the letter of the law, but also try to create a better quality of life for our residents by making sure that our nightly rentals are licensed and safe, and also that we have this service also provides a complaint hotline that we can use to track issues with our nightly rentals, and also make sure that we, you know, create a good inventory and list and of all of our licenses.
Yeah, I guess the resistance I was thinking would be from the property owners who are, you know, and their Airbnb business.
You know, I think a lot of it is education, and maybe there are some people that are actively trying not to get a business license, but I think you know, this organization, I think Lodging Revs has a 90% plus compliance rate, and so I guess our concern isn't really for the people that don't want to be in compliance. Like, if you're going to run a nightly rental, you need to be licensed and follow the same rules that everyone else does in this community for lodging. So I'm not really concerned about people who just don't care to get their business license.
Okay. Anything else, Becca, you want to mention?
You know, we're going into a 4th of July weekend, and I know that there are some things that are different this year, but we're really excited to celebrate with our community. And, you know, we have, there have been some reports from the state that COVID cases are increasing. So make sure you're safe and aware of your surroundings, but get out there and enjoy the holiday, enjoy the parade today, be safe, have a happy 4th. And, we're just a very lucky community to be in the place we are. And as we look out the windows, especially from here, we are a very lucky community. So yeah, I'll leave it with that. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
All right. Thanks, Becca. Thank you. Becca Gerber, a member of the Park City Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. After being shuttered for almost a year and a half, the Park City Institute welcomes back its patrons Saturday evening with a performance by Parsons Dance. On the phone with a preview is one of the dancers, Zoe Anderson. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about Parsons Dance. Who are you?
Yes, well, Parsons Dance is a modern contemporary company, and the founder is David Parsons, and he has produced a company that not only is beautiful with the technique of modern and based from the Paul Taylor movement, but he has been able to create a company that is athletic. And it's about connection and exploring shapes, and lighting is his muse. And he also just loves humanity and the idea of connecting with each other as we perform and connecting with audience members and traveling and just really getting to take risks every day and push ourselves and push our limits. And I think something I really have loved about Parsons is we get to travel a ton. We are constantly on the road, and we're getting to experience so many different parts and aspects that the world has to offer, and that's something I've really loved and appreciated.
All right, so are all of the works then choreographed by David?
Most all of the works on Parsons Dance are created by David Parsons, but he also loves the idea of bringing in guest choreographers. He thinks it's important for, you know, the look of his company and the ability to have diversity and versatility incorporated. So he has brought in many guest choreographers as well, which is also exciting for us to tap into different styles of dance and to connect with different artists.
Okay, so you've been with Parsons Dance for how long?
I've been with Parsons Dance for 6 full seasons, and now I'm entering into my 7th year, and it is crazy to think how fast time goes, but I've loved every minute of it, and I can't wait to continue.
Yeah. So you say one of the things you love about it is all the traveling you do, but have you guys been dancing during the pandemic, or...?
We have been so blessed to be able to continue our craft and dancing together through this pandemic. It amazes me. Parsons Dance has not let down. They have gotten creative. They have done everything in every way, shape, and form to allow us and provide us not only financially, which has been incredible, but more so just to be able to continue to get together as a company in our little bubble, the 8 of us. And we've made sure to take all precautions, and we've kept safe and healthy. And, you know, I'm on, like, test number 30. And we've all been so willing to do whatever it takes to be able to get together each month and rehearse. We've even done some shows or some informal showings with, you know, of course, less people in the audience or outdoor performances. But it's been a true gift. And Parsons has really allowed us to continue our work through this time.
So you're going to be dancing again in Park City at the Echo Center for the Performing Arts Saturday night. Tell us what you're going to be performing.
Yes, so we are so thrilled that we are coming to Park City, Utah, where I am from, Sandy, Utah. So it's going to be amazing to be welcomed back there with friends and family and energy and excitement. We will be performing a full show, and we have about 6 pieces in the program for the audience that night, and we just can't wait to get out there and share this love and the beauty and the artistry that David Parsons has created.
All right, and you'll be performing in how many of them?
I will be performing in all of them but one, so I have a full show ahead of me, and I couldn't be more excited.
Okay. And anything you can tell us about maybe one of your favorites, then?
Yeah. So I'll actually just run through the program quick. We are opening with a beautiful classic called Nascimento, and it's really just about we're in Brazil, and we are, you know, taking in the sun and the beauty that's around us and connecting with our friends, and I feel like it's just a great way to start the show and welcome the audience into our little world. There's also going to be an improv piece called Kind of Blue, and it gives the dancers a chance to really explore improvisation and get kind of that jazzy blues feel, which really just helps everyone relax and transport into a different world and time. I'm really excited to be showing a new solo that David and I collaborated on, and it's called Balance of Power, and it really is something that is so special to me. We created this for 2 weeks before the pandemic started, and we did a collab with a musician, and so it's really just the beauty and the connection between music and movement. And he would play sounds, and I would see how that would make my body react. Or vice versa, I would start moving and he would play what he saw. So I really think it will be something so, so, so rewarding and exciting for me to be able to share with, you know, people that I love dearly that will be out in the audience. And I'm excited for that one for sure. And then also I can't forget Caught being one of David's iconic works. Such a simple idea that it's going to take the audience to a whole nother idea and concept, which is flying, and that's something everyone, most people, dream of doing. And it's simple. It's used with 2 strobe lights, and basically I appear that I'm flying throughout the 5-6 minutes, and you never see me touch the ground. So that one always is such a magical moment and exciting for both the dancer and the audience member. And then 2 more, there will be a beautiful duet that is called Finding Center. It's an excerpt from a group piece. And it's beautiful about strength and the connection between the 2 partners. And the girls basically lifted throughout most of the duet. And it's quiet. It's very elegant, and it draws the audience in, and it's a very special little moment that's shared between the two dancers. And then last, we have a new work. It's called The Road, and the music is Cat Stevens. So it brings such energy and positivity, and it's really about us all traveling on this journey together and the interactions and the people that we come in contact with. And it's quite amazing for us to be able to wrap up a show and just feel the love and joy that dance brings the world. So I am just so beyond excited to share these pieces and the show with Utah.
All right. Well, showtime 7:30 p.m. again Saturday night. Tickets start at $19 with discounts available for Summit County students as well as teachers, veterans, and first responders. For tickets or more information, it's parkcityinstitute.org or call 435-655-3114. Zoe Anderson, looking forward to it. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate it.